This is the Kinky Cast. This is an adult, sexually explicit podcast. If you are under 18 years old, please stop the podcast now. This is episode 62 of our weekly exploration in the kinky world of BDSM and alternative relationships. Views expressed are not representative of the management of the Kinky Cast. In today's episode, we chat about dungeon monitoring with Lord Tamhas of Lubbock, Texas. Here's your hosts, Woody and the Beast.
Thanks, Max, and welcome to another edition of the Kinky Cast. How are you, Beast, sitting across the table there?
I'm feeling human again after a couple of days of inhumanity.
It's only spring, man.
That's the reason.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, it's just strong on me.
Good to see you back at the desk. Tonight we have some interesting things going on. On the phone with us, we have Lord Thomas from Lubbock, Texas. How are you, LT?
Doing good, Woody. Glad to be here.
You're a big fan of ours. You repeat our episodes on your site every week, and we really do appreciate it.
Well, it's one of the best ways I have of getting good information out to the people in this area. You know, just let them know where to go.
Lubbock, Texas. Now, that's out in the panhandle, West Texas, right?
Yeah, birthplace of Buddy Holly.
Yes, that's right. I had a submissive many moons ago from Lubbock, Texas. A very interesting girl. She was an opera singer and played the harp.
You wouldn't expect that.
It was a bizarre combination, and she was one freaky chick.
Yes. Lubbock is a town of about 250,000 people?
Close to it, a little under that.
To have a kinky group in that area, it must be interesting trying to find each other and finding play spaces and meeting places, right?
Oh, it's been real interesting out here. I think when I got involved here in Lubbock, there was one Yahoo group that has basically dried up and disappeared. And then they started a couple of other groups. And eventually, I'd have to say when FetLife came out, it basically exploded here in town. It's been solid growth ever since then.
Well, I think that was the case in many communities. When FET came along, it just was a perfect storm. People started finding each other.
A bonding agent.
Let's see. FET started in January of 2008, and I joined FET in April of 2008.
So you have a nice low number.
Oh, yeah.
And here I was happy with my 52,000. Yeah, I've been around a few years also.
It's been interesting out here, but we now have close to, let's see, there's a TNG group, a rope group, West Texas BDSM, which is based in Lubbock, and then there's a group called Private Matters here in Lubbock. So that's at least four.
Wow.
It's a growing metropolis.
That's a rich variety there.
We've got enough things going on to where I feel comfortable in just basically pulling back and getting out of leadership routines because there's enough people wanting to do crazy things that, hey, fine, y'all go with it.
Well, while we have Lord Thomas on the phone with us, we're going to bring him in on one of our bashful questions that came in through the website. Let's see if we can get some expanded experience with this, because you've been in the scene for about 15 years, right, LT?
Yes.
Between the Beast and myself and you, we've got a fair amount of experience. So I'm going to read the question here, and let's see what you think about it.
I'm 58 and female. Is it too late for me to embrace this part of myself? Will I be accepted as a newbie? Are there others like me? Just beginning and experienced doms willing to want to play with someone who isn't under 35.
That's an ominous question.
It is. I can say that the under 35, I prefer my partners a bit older. Under 35 is usually a red flag there for me.
LT, what do you think?
You know, what dirty old man wouldn't care to, you know, it's a dream of a dirty old man to be sitting there playing with those young newbie chicks, but over 35, yes, that is definitely acceptable because, like B said, you know, there's that red flag limit. But we've had several people come in out here that were in their late 40s with the same deal. We had one lady here, a good friend of mine. She came in, was real slow in getting things going on. We played together a little bit. And there was one evening sitting at a poker meeting that a guy came in, his very first time coming out. And they left right about the same time, within a few minutes of each other. And I don't know what conversation took place between from the door of that place to the cars in the parking lot, but ever since then, they've been a very good couple showing up.
And so that was a first excursion for her?
Yeah, and it's turned out very, very well because she was always complaining she didn't really see a dom in the neighborhood or anything or someone her own age except for people younger than her. But there are older people coming in wanting to see other aspects like that. So, yes, I would encourage a person to come on out.
Well, that's good advice, and I certainly agree with that. I know my three girls are over 50, and that's a good thing. I like them that way.
Well, two of mine are over 50. One's almost 60 now. My third one is a 21-year-old, so I guess I'm falling in that trap there.
Well, you're working both sides of the street, as it were.
I am never a man to say enough is enough. Mm-hmm. Some of the things I see that she's going to face possibly is she's going to have to persevere because there is going to be some acceptance hurdles. A lot of the education is coming through the TNG groups, and she's not going to have access to everything out there. But I do believe she'll find a rich community that will fulfill her fantasies and her dreams.
And we don't know where she is because it doesn't say that in the note. So we'll just wish her the best. Find a munch, get involved with the community, find the leader of the munch and have them introduce you around and enjoy the lifestyle.
And to find a munch, go to the internet and literally type findamunch.com and that will lead you there.
Anywhere in the world, practically.
Anywhere.
We'll be back with Lord Thomas right after this message from our friends at Self.
Join us at Southeast Leatherfest. We're erecting a vision of ponies, puppies, and perverts.
Oh my!
Have cocktails, mingle, and make a date for our on-site dungeon.
Visit SELeatherfest.com. Come to South June 11th through the 14th in Atlanta and erect your vision.
We're back with Lord Thomas in Lubbock, Texas. So tonight we're here to talk about dungeon monitoring, DMs. You have a lot of experience in this, right?
I've been a DM for almost as long as I've been involved in the active lifestyle. There was a group here, the Yahoo group, actually, that started out here. I was approached by some of the leaders then and ask if I would DM a dark party and actually do the rules for a dark party.
For our new listeners, what is a dark party?
A dark party is anything goes between consenting adults. Most play parties and things, especially in the larger organized dungeons in the metropolitan areas, there is no sexual contact, no sexual penetration because of different laws in the different communities. But in a dark party, which is usually held at a private residence, it's anything goes. If you want to get into some BDSM sexual play, hey, go right ahead. You know, if you want to just reach out and grab your submissive's head and shove it in the lap and get a blowjob, hey, that's fine, you know. Y'all are consenting adults. It's agreed upon. Do it. You don't normally see that in an organized dungeon.
What are the laws in Texas regarding sex in public or private places?
We have to do something very carefully on that because we have to skirt the prostitution laws and stuff like that and sexually orientated businesses, all of that. So in the majority of all of your dungeons and play parties at home, there's usually no penetration, no anal, vaginal, or oral penetration, but anything else can be done.
And prostitution has interesting definitions. What most people think of prostitution, which is paying for sex, is not always the way the law interprets it.
True. It can be an exchange of different things. Out here, we just basically say donations and all of this. There's no actual fee for coming in. You know, there's not a door charge or a door fee. It's a suggested donation. And it's usually private clubs like the Sanctuary in Dallas is a private club, and it's a members only and guests. So there's various ways depending on where you're at.
And in Tennessee, most of the organizations are going with the private club, members and guests only. In most of the state, full contact is allowed at the clubs, but they are not public spaces in any stretch of the imagination.
Yes, in any of the Bible Belt areas, we have problems with that. It's not like on the West Coast or places like that where it's totally accepted and you can do things of that nature.
You got started in writing play guides for these parties. How did you get started in being a dungeon master or a dungeon monitor? We've heard those terms used interchangeably.
Yeah, it was a dungeon master, monitor, whatever, and it's basically evolved to where now the accepted term is monitor. You know, it was a dungeon master, but that got too confusing with Dungeons and Dragons and stuff like that, so it sort of became dungeon monitor now. It's still called DM.
I was looking through some of your bio material, and I see you kind of got started through the David Walker schools.
Master Walker, he came out to the Panhandle area and did a demo weekend class up in Amarillo, which is about 2.5 hours north of here, and it was a fireplay demo. And I asked him if I could take photographs, this, that, and the other, all of this. And he said, sure, no problem. So I now have several good photographs of him doing a fireplay class. The following morning, he did leather families and the traditional deals of how he came into the lifestyle back in the 80s through the gay leather routine as a straight man. And he mentioned that he was going to be doing a DM class. And it was a certified DM class. The group he was with was the Council of Tribes, and it was trying to set up a standard across the board, everything around, standard DM routine, to where you go to Dallas and you can expect the same actions from your DM as you're going to see over in Chicago, to set a standard on it. And he started doing a Dungeon Monitor class. The first year or so of it, I think it was done online, but then it got to be a little bit more detailed and more in-depth to do online, and, you know, it got, I think it was a 3-day class at one time, and that was kind of hard to get to all of this routine, but I think in the Southeast, I've heard tales of where if you had a card from the Council of Tribes as a certified DM, you were more than welcome to be a DM anywhere at the organized play parties.
You didn't just take the Walker, though. You started compiling your own set of material, didn't you?
Well, I compiled a lot of it, and with the growth that was going on in the Panhandle area, I got more into it and started researching a lot more and was putting together some things. And a couple of years back, Private Matters group here in town, right when it was first started, the person that was organizing it asked me if I would join them on the board of directors for that, if I would help them do the play party that they were planning, because they were looking at Private Matters becoming a educational group, bringing in speakers, holding educational demos, workshops, classes, having parties, all of this. And once a year, they would have what they call their Private Matters event. So I said, okay, I can do this. I can help y'all with the DM on that, and I will actually set up something to where we can start training DMs. That's when I actually put it all together as a DM guide.
And is that guide available out anywhere in the world?
Yeah, you can go either to my FetLife profile are to my FetLife group I have, LT's Lair, and you can get a copy of it there. There's a link on that will take you to Google Drive, and you can actually print out a copy of the full 26 pages I have.
And I'm sure that Woody will chime in here in a moment, that will be available as a hot link on our...
That's right, Beast. You know, I would do that, but you already did.
It'll be available as a link on our Hot Links page. For some of our newer listeners, we are a growing community, growing by leaps and bounds in this post-50 world. Help me understand, what is a dungeon monitor and what do they do in the scene?
A dungeon monitor is basically, in our larger dungeons or play spaces, play parties, that's where we get to go out and experiment, where we can do our kink. We can move it out of the bedroom into the living room, where you have your friends and colleagues and people of like mind, the fellow kinksters.
Do we have to stop at the living room? Can we include the bathroom and the dining room and the sunroom? And
I've had so much fun on outdoor patio, it's pretty cool. Oh, man. You can go out and explore potentials, try out new things. You can observe other people doing something like fire play, wax play, stuff like this. I remember one time at the sanctuary in Dallas watching a guy do a double hand Florentine flogger on his submissive, and she's spread eagle tied to overhead bar. And it was like awesome watching him. I learned a lot of different techniques on that. But the DM is the person who is there for safety, for security. He fulfills different roles, you know, a lifeguard, monitoring your play space, providing assistance, intervention, instruction if it's needed. The DM is also a guide, you know, giving you directions around in the dungeon where to find different things, the safety equipment, and different information. And, of course, the DM is a cop, enforcing the dungeon rules established by whoever organized the party. The participating in an event as a DM, it's a tough job because you got to be a cop, you got to be a guide. It's basically a master of ceremonies type deal. You have to keep an attention on everything that goes on in that dungeon.
One thing that goes with that is people have to be aware of the house rules of that particular dungeon they're in. Because the DM is enforcing those house rules. There is not a standard set that applies across all play spaces. Even in the same play space, if a different group is renting the dungeon out that night, they could have different rules. Mm. Out on the West Coast, I would go to the same play space I go on a regular basis, but there's a particular party going on that night, sponsored by a different group, and they had no sexual penetration without barriers rule up where the dungeon normally did not. And so, you know, and you sign those rules when you go in. And so it's up to everybody to understand that because the DM is just enforcing the rules that you signed.
That's one of the things I bring out in my DM guide is the DM has got to make himself or herself familiar with those rules. And they do vary from place to place. You know, when I DM'd in Lubbock, there was one set of rules, and it was basically no alcohol, this, that, and the other. But going down to the Midland, Odessa area, about 2 hours drive south of here, they didn't mind having some alcohol in the dungeon, but the DM and the participants kept an eye on everybody. The entire time I was down there, I never saw anyone get too inebriated. Just enough to loosen themselves up, basically wine coolers and beer.
When I used to play in Europe, alcohol was a normal part of the activity, whereas the average in the U.S. is kind of a no-alcohol thing. And so when you find one different, it's kind of interesting to see.
A lot of the DM training goes in. We stress one thing. BDSM play is informed consent between people in a dynamic, a fluid dynamic. And a lot of times you cannot have informed consent if you have indulged in alcohol or drugs because you are inebriated, your judgment is impaired. It can go to an extreme. You don't feel the pain as much. The next day when you're sober up, all of a sudden you're realizing, oh my God.
Went a little further than you thought.
Right.
One other thing that I wanted to talk about was consent that you were mentioning. It is one thing to have consent going into a scene, but when it is going too far, if you are heading from yellow to red or some other things around that, at some point you have to say, I'm revoking consent. In the case of NCSF, there is a lot of issues regarding consent and revoking of consent.
Yeah, it's one of the touchy deals in not only BDSM, it's in the vanilla culture too. It's like you go out on a date, you're having all kinds of fun, you're playing around, you're engaging in oral sex, and everything is fine and consensual. But when you go to have the actual genital penetration, the person says no, and the other person keeps going.
And that's why in BDSM and negotiations, we say negotiate sex up front.
Yes, have your negotiations all done. Negotiate all the way through. And there's a difference of negotiation if you're going to do casual pickup play or a definite play to where it's like a date routine. You know, you meet somebody in a dungeon and munch and say, hey, you want to get into a little play tonight? And you say, okay, fine, we'll do a flogging scene. Or you get into something else, you need to negotiate all the way through.
The one thing that goes with that is don't renegotiate in the middle of a scene.
No, not in the middle of a scene. You stick to the original negotiations, and if the submissive wants to go beyond it, the dom has got to stay, no, let's stay with it. Or if the dom wants to go beyond that, the submissive definitely needs to say no.
And as they say, you have to let the endorphins subside before a new negotiation starts.
Yeah, because I've seen some submissives really, really flying, and they just have no problem if the dom wants to do a renegotiation. They're just fine. There was one time I was playing with a submissive, and I had her off in subspace. I'm checking in with her every so often. I said, are you okay? She said, yes. I said, okay, we kept going. I said, you want to keep going? And she says, yeah, no problem. And I looked at her, and I knew that she had not had anything to drink or any illegal substance. She was just gaga, fall down, slurry all over the place, looked like sloppy drunk. And I just said, okay, that's fine. This is enough. And off to the side we went. But at that time, I could have done anything I wanted to.
LT, the dungeon monitor, it's a complicated job. I see a couple of different jobs all doing it at the same time. You're the rule enforcer, the conflict resolver, the play space manager, the safety monitor, and sometimes when things go really badly, you become a part of the first aid rescue situation. We talked a little bit about the rule enforcer, but this conflict resolver, that sounds like a very delicate, dangerous job.
A conflict resolver can be rather interesting to do because you can get a deal in personnel conflicts or personality conflicts. You know, you get people going into an argument. People are coming up, two people approach a play space, say they want to use St. Andrew's Cross at the same time, and they say, like, okay, they start arguing, it's who got there first, who has it, or you've already played on it, and you're coming back for more. So it gets a delicate situation where the DM has got to defuse that and move it away. That way it doesn't interfere with other people's play in neighboring areas. You need to resolve that and move it on, because part of the DM, his job is to keep the atmosphere going. You know, you've got somebody next to you that's getting into a really good knife scene, and the submissive is just at the threshold of going into subspace when there's an argument crop up next to him. Or you have somebody that's one of the observers that are a little too close, critiquing the routine too loudly. The DM has got to get to them, say, hey, tone it down, keep it quiet, or shut up. If you can't do that, please move on. Because the whole aspect of BDSM play is to hit that altered state of consciousness. Then the DM has got to watch and make sure there is nothing going on that would create a conflict where you can't hit that headspace.
DDM here is like a great law enforcement officer, able to go beyond just enforcing the letter of the law, get everybody to agree to go along with this.
Yeah, at least one good thing over the whole expansion of BDSM, especially in the latter part of last century, you know, the 1900s, say from 1970 onward, more of the larger established organized place-based areas, it's become part of custom, tradition, an accepted deal to where the DM is the recognized authority. He's the sheriff of the dungeon. It's become accepted by members of that because they are trying to be impartial and make everything go smoother, and it's accepted that their word in the dungeon is law.
So I see the place-based manager, and that you kind of touched on that a bit. So he's controlling the traffic flow and so forth. Most of the time, the drivers are doing well, but sometimes somebody's got to get out there and help move things along.
Yeah, and the place-based manager, the DM, is, you know, he's more doing orientation, assistance. He's making sure it's a clean and orderly place-based area. You know, somebody leaves out from this one area, he makes sure that they have cleaned the area of all bodily fluids, if any has done, you know, like if it's been blood play going on or needle play, knife play, that the area is clean and sanitary for the next person coming in to use the space. Directing traffic, you know, if there's people walking around, you've got to keep that scene bubble clear, because if somebody is using a whip or a flogger, and somebody gets in a little too close, you know, the DM says, hey, you know, move away, give them some space. Though a lot of time I think, especially in our area, if somebody gets a little too close to a flogging scene and they get hit with a guy using a flogger, it's like, okay, we warned you. You don't want to get too close, especially if there's a bullwhip going.
I was doing a scene in a dungeon, and I had this lovely young thing naked, face up on a table. I just caught out of the corner of my eye, there's a guy about 6 feet away just standing there leering at her. And within seconds, the DM had come up behind him, put hands on each shoulder, spun him around, and walked him out the door. And that's when I really appreciated a DM.
Yes, the DM is not the enemy. He's the friend that you want to go in. The very first Private Matters event that we did was held in a private residential home. We had the backyard converted for dungeon deals. That's where the cross was. We had a place up under the carport set up where fire play was going to go on, all of this, and just running around. I made sure that I greeted everyone at the front door as they came in, said I would be doing the DM. Here's a copy of your rules. If you have any questions, ask me at any time. And this is the one deal that I stress. If you're going to be doing any type play that's going to have a repercussion later of any type, let the DM know. A couple of people from Amarillo came in, and one of the DOMs told me that one of his submissives that he would be playing with, that she reacted very strangely when she hit subspace. It's basically, she went into subspace and it was like she became catatonic, could not move, collapsed, all of that. And he said, don't worry about this. If you see it happening, it's no big thing. All of this is okay. So a couple of hours later, as I'm walking around doing a sweep through the dungeon area, I see a group of people trying to lift this person up and move them off to another area. And I look and I recognize them. Okay, this is the person that goes really deep into subspace, catatonic. I nodded, gave the guy a thumbs up. He nodded back, and I just kept going. I didn't have to pay attention to it.
Well, and that's what it's all about.
A lot of times you can even do a step beyond that, which I recommend, is if you meet someone at a party and you decide to do some play, if you can, and a lot of times in a crowded dungeon it's difficult to do, but in the smaller areas, in the private residence, private home parties, bring your DM into your negotiations. That way you know what is going on. They know what's going on. And if somebody wants to come up and said, oh, my God, this is too much, it's dangerous, all of this, you can look at them and say, no, fine, back off. The DM knows about this.
Well, it's always better when they know what's going on so that they can either rule earlier if something's going off track or leave you alone if that's where it was supposed to go.
Yes, because levels of play are different. The level that I play is different from someone else, and their type of play may not be my cup of tea. But if the DM knows what's going on, you know, you can look at it and say, okay, this is unsafe behavior, this, that, and the other. But if you're involved in the negotiations and you realize that they have negotiated extreme play, skirting the edge of safety and really creeping up to the, you know, just right there on the edge, then as you DM the scene, you don't have to worry about it because you know that this is what they've discussed. And if somebody comes up to you and says, hey, you might want to check this out, it looks like they're going a little bit dangerous and too far, you can look over and says, the situation is under control. Don't worry. We've negotiated this and put that observer's mind at ease.
That brings up the point that the DM really does not have to be expert at everything. He just has to be able to understand the basics of safe and unsafe and make calls when questions arise.
Yes. When the questions arrive, you need to be able to handle that. And you're right. They don't need to be the expert. They do need to have some basic knowledge on everything. And if they're unfamiliar with the scene or the play, they can get another DM to watch that scene. There are some times that I have suggested to the group that in certain plays out here, we have a designated DM for that type of play, which is basically your needle play, your fire play, and your knife play.
And you also have the issue of other people's kink that isn't yours.
Like breath play. This is one of the deals that touches on me and my own aspect and everything. Breath play is a very, very controversial type of play. Jay Wiseman.
Yes, the poster boy.
Yeah. Breath play can be done safely by the same two individuals time after time after time with no problem.
Not according to Jay.
Yeah, then it can go south real quick.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because you're cutting off oxygen. The brain depends on oxygen for survival. I will not DM a breath play scene. I get somebody else that says, you do that, because I do not want the legal responsibility in a lawsuit, if it all goes south, that I did not step in and stop that before it got out of hand, it resulted in death.
A heart attack is so possible in that moment.
Yes.
You can't really determine whether it's going to happen or not. You don't know the health of the submissive. Certainly, even some of the players that I have played with, I don't know the detailed health of their heart.
Well, that's like me. I have a heart condition myself. I've got congestive heart failure and coronary artery disease. So I can fully understand when you get into questions of health.
So I'm not going to do breath play with you is what you're telling me?
Yeah, I will not do breath play and I will not DM a breath play scene. Though people in the area, the organizers of events, allow the breath play. I will say, okay, fine. There's going to be breath play going on. You need a designated DM. You get someone else over in that area, or I will send another DM into that area. But I personally will not DM a breath play scene. It's too freaking dangerous.
How do you interrupt a problematic situation?
Very, very delicately. You have to do it very delicately because you don't want to stop the scene unless there is something definitely going on. But if you have a question about it, you move up within visual range of the players, get their visual attention, and pull them to the side a little bit, not really interrupting the flow if they can avoid it, and politely, easily, very diplomatically bring your concern to the guy. Say, okay, I'm a little concerned you're bottom here doesn't really seem to be responding well on this. Is everything okay? because of the player, the top, can be off in top space and has lost touch with it. It can help recenter them. But if everything goes okay and you're satisfied with the answer, you can pull back, let them resume play. If it's not okay and they don't seem to be going on, you can very diplomatically shut the play down and move them outside the area. Keeping in mind, you don't want to interfere with other scenes that may be going on and cause a disruption. I'm very glad to say that in the majority of the time that I have been DMing, I have never had to stop any scene.
LT, I just want to go over the 6 core values of DM behavior. I think those are important for people to understand. So number 1, we have respect. Is that people respecting the DM or DM respecting the people?
The DM respecting the people. The DM's got to be respectful of their choices, their lifestyle choices. You know, you may have a gender fluid guy and a gay couple or whatever going on, daddy dom, little, and all of this. You have to accept their lifestyles and their play activities. Be respectful in not making judgment other than the dungeon rules. Keep your own personal beliefs out of it. Recognize that all players deserve a safe space to enact their lifestyle, and that's the dungeon.
Number 2, courtesy.
Be very courteous. It's sort of like the DM has got to be the butler out of Downton Abbey type deal. You have to act with courtesy during all interactions. Treat every individual with dignity and patience. Anticipate that they may be a little bit uneasy and are resisting you. And, you know, if you're going to do an intervention, you're going to have to say that, okay, this guy may get a little bit angry. Handle all of your infractions with a firm but polite manner.
Number 3, confidence.
DMs have got to have that self-confidence and to defend their own decisions. You've got to make your judgment call decisively and quickly. You can't hem and haw around on doing that. You have to be able to defend and justify your judgments and by stating the breach rule or the policy. That's where it goes back to knowing your dungeon rules. And you have to have the ability to admit and apologize when you've been incorrect. You know, there's nothing wrong in hemming and hawing and not being able to make up your mind.
Number 4, discretion.
That is very important. You know, discretion, anonymity, routine. You know, that's the whole core value of BDSM. What we do, we keep it, you know, it's like what happens in Vegas stays in Vegas. But discretion is a DM. You know, when somebody comes in the front door at the beginning of the deal, we'd like to find out if there's any medical issues with them that we might need to know about. You know, like say they're a diabetic and they're all of a sudden going into insulin shock or low blood sugar type routine. As a DM, you need to know these things. Or if a guy has epilepsy and you need to know whether this is actual part of the play or if he's having an epileptic fit. That's a tongue twister getting that one out. You need to know these medical deals, but yet you have to have the discretion as to not let it out to anyone else because he may be epileptic but doesn't want anybody to know. Or if they have an STD, say AIDS or something like this, there's nothing wrong with that. There's nothing to be discriminating about it, and there's nothing to be ashamed of for it. But within the dungeon, people get really freaky going in and making sure the play space is clean and sterile. But you don't want to advertise that someone has been in there with that condition. That is where discretion comes in.
Number 5, cooperation.
Okay, a DM has got to be able to cooperate with all party attendees, both the players, the other staff, the observers, all of this. You've got to be able to maintain a friendly attitude. You have to be able to support your fellow DM's judgment, even if you don't agree with it. You know, he's saying he wants to shut this down because of this, or he already has. You have to be able to back him up on it. you have to listen to both sides of any dispute. You know, say that people arguing about the cross, you have to listen to both sides and make your decision based on that. You've got to be able to keep an open line of communications at all times between all people in that, whether it's your fellow DMs, your staff, especially your event organizers, all of this routine. That's where the cooperation really comes in handy.
And number six, fairness.
Everybody gets treated equal. One time that I put down in a DM training class, I was stating the, you know, different deals like this on fairness. All rules apply to all players, regardless of status, all your relationships. Don't be playing favorites. You know, there was a deal I came down and it was sort of like exceptions to this rule. There are no exceptions. Everyone is treated the same. If a guy comes in and he's Lord High Muckety Muck, whatever, one of the best riggers in the world, and he's wanting to have all these special considerations gone, sorry, dude, you get treated just like that newcomer that walked in, you know, don't know one hole from another. You know, you get treated just like him. You know, there's no special considerations for anybody.
So those are the six values that a DM has to have and represent. The next really important thing, and I think it's really kind of the last word in really important things, is first aid. When something really does go wrong, then what?
One of the things that all DMs are stressed to know, and it's encouraged and a lot of times required in everything. I know Shea Blondie out in the Citadel in San Francisco requires all of the DMs out there to be first aid certified. I think she has EMTs teaching the classes on that routine. First aid is definitely necessary to know. It's good, and I encourage everyone to be DM, to be a certified first aid CPR level qualified, because things go wrong. Like I mentioned before, diabetic going into insulin shock. You need to know what to do, what to handle. You get somebody that has a shoulder pulled out of place or whatnot, or they sprain their ankle in a rope scene, you know, stumbling, coming out of suspension. You need to know what to do to handle this. You need to know where the first aid supplies are. You need to be able to bring them out. Somebody gets a scratch or some of the bleeding's going on too long and removing needles in a needle play scene. You need to be able to direct people to the first aid kit for Band-Aids, this, that, and the other. And if it's a supreme case of something gone south real bad, and knife play or whatnot, you need to be able to do the compression on the bandage to stop the bleeding, all of this. You need to know all the aspects of it. But if it's beyond anything of minor problems, you need to know to call 911. And then the DM goes into another mode of crowd control and letting people know that, okay, these people are going to start coming in here. If you don't want to be known, you might want to clean up your act and disappear. So first aid is rather important, but a lot of times the response on that is dial 911. That takes the edge off.
When you dial 911, you could get a collection of people coming in the front door, everything from the EMTs to firemen and even police.
Because here in Lubbock, when a 911 call goes out, you have a fire truck show up, you have EMTs from the fire department coming in, and the ambulance service. So you've got three different vehicles out there, and depending on where the call was made from, you will probably have police officers show up too.
So if you're being discreet, or if you're being anonymous, it's time to pack it up and get out.
Yeah, and that's where the DM needs to go into a crowd control and assuring people that everything is okay, we're going to have a disturbance, these people are going to come in. If your anonymity is really, really important to you, you might want to disappear for a while, put your clothes on, and leave the dungeon. But they have to be done quick, because most response times here in Lubbock is like 6 minutes.
Which is great when you need that help. LT, you've been a great guest with us. Is there anything else you'd like to add?
No, that's basically it. My DM workshop that I do normally runs about 3 hours, but we've covered the basic routines on that. There's more to being a DM. Would definitely go beyond this program time.
Well, this is to get people interested and to let people know what a DM does and to respect your local DMs.
Yes, the DM, when you walk into a dungeon or a play party, don't look at the DM as an enemy or whatnot, because he is there to help everyone, keep things moving smoothly, efficiently, because the whole thing of DM play is to get to that headspace, get to that subspace, get to that Dom space, and have fun, get those endorphins going, all of this. That's what the DM is there for. He's to make sure you can achieve your goal safely.
With that in mind, do you have any links that you want to share for more information?
The link to my DM guide, it's the creative copyright routine, which is very easy to go along with. And if anybody wants to utilize it, they can contact me. I have no problem in giving my permission on that to utilize it, to read it, to copy it on out. The links on how to use the Creative Common copyright are on LT's Lair and get that, or my profile.
Your profile is under
Lord Tamas, T-A-M-H-A-S, with an underscore.
Okay, very good. So we have that good information on our Hot Links page, and we really do thank you for your time tonight. I hope everybody has a new view on how they see the DM.
So do I. Keep it kinky, but keep it safe.
You have been listening to episode 62 of the Kinky Cast. The Kinky Cast is a production of Rooster in the Round. On behalf of Woody, the Beast, and all our kinky crew, I'm Max. See you next week when we hear Shiva's vessel on Polyamory. What could possibly go wrong?